And I want to introduce you to Nancy Brooks, an author, educator, and dream expert who mentored with Jungian dream researcher Dr. Robert Reese, and has spent the last 30 years teaching adults and kids at risk in classes such as Interviewing Your Dreams as a Resource for Life and Finding the Creative Person Within. Brooks has taught seminars in high schools, colleges, universities, and within community organizations such as Survivors of Suicide and Compassionate Friends. And she has a book out that's amazing. It's an amazing book called Dreamscapes. The new version of the book is called Dreams, Many Dreams, Many Journeys. Mm-hmm. Many Dreams, Many Journeys. Welcome, Nancy. Can't wait to talk to you about dreams. Dreams.
Lydia, thank you for that wonderful introduction. And I'm excited for all of our people on Facebook Live that have been watching us now for the past couple of years. Nancy is from the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area. So she's in my stomping grounds, and I'm really excited to have you, Nancy. And just wondering if you can tell us a little bit. I was really excited to have you as a guest because of all your dream education that you've done for the past 30 years. And that's just a fascinating opportunity to tie dreams into God shots. And so tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's just been the joy of my life, to be honest. There's nothing I enjoy doing more than working with people individually or in large groups, mentor programs. I can go back to a little bit of my background, how this got started. And it was really my mom was my first mentor. And really all she did was when we were little kids, she would just at breakfast or at dinner time, she would say, listen to this wild and crazy dream. And we would laugh. That's all we did. But I think because we were young and she was so forthcoming with this creative, I don't think that she thought it was creative, but it is. I mean, we create 3 to 10 dreams a night, you know. I just picked it up. I paid attention. And I don't remember a time when I didn't help people with their dreams. I always had a really good generic understanding of dreams. And then I worked with a Jungian dream worker. And then I went to California to work with Dr. Gail Delaney, who was the first founder and president of the International Association for Dreams. And with her, she basically came up with the dream interview method. And I really love that method because what it says is that it's your dream and no one has the right to tell you what your dream means. So you just ask really some simple questions about the symbolism in a dream, the energy, the action in a dream, the emotion in a dream. And it's astounding the amount of information that you can actually get just by asking a few questions. And that's what I do.
How do dreams help our lives? And there were some quotes in your book that I wrote down specifically to ask you about, that everyone has the inner intuition, the ability to access a higher realm of thought and answers to their problems in life, right?
Exactly.
Elaborate on that, on what dreams do for us. What is the purpose of dreams?
Well, dreams will tell you where you've been, where you are, and where you're going. Because internally, that unconsciously, we know where we've been, we know where we are, and we know where we're going. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not distracted. That doesn't mean that we're not culturally, socioeconomically taught to think differently. But within ourselves, we know, again, where we've been, where we are, and where we're going. And dreams basically are it's just information. My grandson, who's 16, said to me a couple of weeks ago, he said, Nan, you don't ever have nightmares, do you? And I said, well, Isaiah, what I would like to say about that is that you think of a nightmare as something that has high, high emotion. So you pay attention to it. That's what we call a nightmare. I said, I don't think about it that way anymore. If I have a dream that has high emotion, I wake up and I go, oh, wow, you know, there's something to look at here. It's just information. Wow. It's neither scary or, you know, I look at dreams And I often within a dream, almost all the time, I'll say, what a great dream, because I can see the information that's there. And that's what's important, is just basically getting at the information that, you know, it's, I think it's God's forgotten language. You know, it's God's psychology.
Well, they can be really funny and crazy, but I've had, after my brother died, I know this is the part people really want to know about. And I have a
sure.
named Cynthia Steindorf, whose husband died of brain cancer 11 months ago. And she has a question for you.
Sure.
I first want to go over what happened to my brother. He died in 1995. I found his body. I never thought I could ever get through that.
Yeah.
And comfort my family through it. And then 10 years later, and he died of a heroin overdose. He was so fragile for this world. He was a concert pianist. Several tragedies happened around his death. And then he appeared to me, one in a lucid dream, they call it. I know this is a visitation dream because I researched it, and I'm so glad to meet you.
Yes.
One day I had this dream, not a dream, but he was standing in front of me fully, amazingly awake, sparkling, and glowing. And he said, and beaming with happiness. And I said, you're back. Your heart is healed.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, my heart's healed. I'm healed. He goes, thank you for teaching me about God.
Oh, wow.
And I'm happy now. I'm healed now. And it was like 10 years after death, which is really weird. And then I had a visitation from him 2 years ago. I feel an alarm went off on a door at midnight, which I put on there for my stepfather. And I'd been talking to Paul, begging to just let me know. I just kept saying, I'm sorry I didn't help you more when you came to LA with your career. And suddenly this bell goes off. It was such a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
So I wonder if these things are real.
Well, I mean, you're just one of thousands of people, maybe millions of people that have had these experiences. So, you know, I mean, the veil between us and the other side is thinner all the time. And the stories that are told to me are just awesome.
Oh,
just
wow.
Awesome. Just like the story that you know, that you just told. And mainly what they're saying is, I'm fine. I'm better than fine. I'm great. I'm good. You know, let me go. You don't have to emotionally carry around the guilt.
Oh, that's it. Because in your book, you talk about the child that died and the children's hospital, and the mother could not let go until her child appeared to her in a dream.
Yes, exactly.
And she said, Mom, I don't want to come back. I'm having a good
time. Yes. Oh, I remember that day that she told me that like it was yesterday, and it was probably 20 years ago. Because, I mean, there was just such relief, release. You know, and she had other children. So it was really important for her to put her daughter's passing into some type of healing context that she could go on, and these siblings would not spend the rest of their lives, you know, neglected and just not getting what they needed in order to, you know, live and fulfill whatever their destiny is here on the planet. Yeah.
Amazing. So they're actual real visitations. Sorry, Danny.
No, that's okay. I mean, I know this conversation gets very deep and very intimate. So my question becomes, people that are dreaming, you're saying that it's information being given to the person in their sleep, you know, in their non-waking hours. So is this information that can guide a person in making decisions? Is it prophetic?
Well, it's many, many different things. So it can be prophetic for sure. It can be just an expression of the anxiety that you're having over some new aspect of your life. It can be a warning dream. You know, you're forming an intimate relationship with someone, and you know, you're a little bit nervous, but you can't, you know, you don't really know why. And then you have a dream that shows you, uh-oh, this is not good. And if you're willing to listen, again, your dreams will tell you, you need to back off. I love talking to high school kids. I love talking to college kids, because that's one of the things that I stress. If you're seeing something in a dream that's warning you, you should pay attention.
And you know what? You said something really good. You said you should listen and back off. Okay. And I heard that loud and clear. But when we're having these dreams, for example, okay. And I've noticed that when I wake up from a dream, the dream journal is very helpful of writing it down, and it helps
me. Oh, yes.
Because within minutes of awakening, it's out of my brain. Like I forget it, right? But how do you suggest or when you're getting these dreams to follow through on what you think that you know from that dream, but yet you're really not sure. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So there's a few things that you can do. One of the things is that you can tell someone your dream, because often when you say it out loud, you go, oh, and I'll give you an example. I was divorced in 1997. I'd been married for 26 years to, and we were a military family. And, you know, divorce is such a rough time. And I had this dream in which there was a man sitting on a flagpole, and I was sitting on a flagpole lower than he was. And I had my arms wrapped around his leg, and I felt such love, just such love, even though we weren't on the same flagpole level, and that I was hugging his leg. All right. And, you know, I had so many emotions at that time that I was just like, what is that? Right. And 3 weeks later, I told someone that dream. I said it out loud, and I thought, oh my gosh, well, what's a flagpole? I mean, what's the military? But you sit on a flagpole sort of, so to speak, you know, you protect, right? And that really was a great symbol of our marriage. I loved him so much, but emotionally he was very distant. He was a really good soldier, really good soldier. But sometimes really good soldiers have a difficult time emotionally
connecting.
Yes, connecting, you know, with their family. So I was just so lonely, and I had all the responsibility and none of the support while he was doing a very important job, no doubt. But again, like I just laughed when I said it out loud, like what in the world was wrong with me? But what happened for me was that I think when you get a divorce, you kind of block the love and you take on the other emotion so that you go through with it. And I think because in that dream, the love was so overwhelming as I hugged his leg, you know, that I didn't want to admit that. Like I didn't want to admit, oh my gosh, I'm losing this love, you know, that I have.
And you know,
does that make sense?
It does. And we were just talking in the previous podcast about love.
Love.
Universal love, and how it heals all things, and how it is all things, and how, you know, when we do God shots, we're actually talking about our higher power or God, whatever you choose to call him. Exactly. And it's pure love.
Actually, I've had examples of love, loving thoughts, healing the body.
Absolutely.
Was hurting like so badly one day in New York. We were walking miles all over the Natural History Museum this summer, and I had this terrible backache, and I started to express love to the kid that was with us and just get off myself. Yes. And back healed. It went away. The pain went away. And I've had examples of forgiveness. They say forgiveness heals wounds. Forgetting heals scars. Just forgetting someone hurt you and forgiving them completely.
And that's another thing that a dream, you know, can do. Absolutely. And I'll give you an example of this. There was a young person in my life, and I loved her very deeply. And she was very difficult. And it got to a place where I just thought, I'm done. I'm just done. I can't do this anymore. And I had a dream. And in the dream, there was a little girl who was from a different culture. And she was beautiful. She was creative. She was a brat. And in the dream, I said, I'm taking you back to your mother. I'm done. And so I took her, and I could see where we were going. I could see her mother's house. It was very archetypal, if you will. As they saw us coming, they gathered her family of origin, not literally, okay, but I knew that's what it was. I knew that was her mother. And there was an archway in which people's faces appeared all along this archway, like round circles, and they were all talking, okay? And they were so happy. They were so happy. And this, her mother, like we'll say on the other side, okay? Her spiritual mother, she was just thrilled with this little girl. And this little girl looked up at me and said, please, please. I could see in her eyes, she was saying, please, please don't tell them what a shit I am.
Wow.
And so when the mother and the ancestors were talking, you know, jabber, 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 you know, just loving her, just, you know, being so happy for, you know, with her, I went along with it. And I just said, yes, you're right. She is all of those things and more. Mm-hmm. And when I woke up, I was able to accept who she was and all her wounds, knowing who she was and is on the other side, her true self. Wow. That's what that showed me.
That's it. The lower nature yeah. here in this
yes.
alien world we're in with the
yes.
mind, that's not the picture, the real picture. The reality
right.
is a beautiful
right.
higher self that we all have access to, but we this other mishigas is in the way. This
absolutely
know, nonsense. Wow.
Yeah, and I could tell you dream after dream after dream like that. Once you begin to, I should say this, once you decide that you're going to look at your dreams as a resource for life, you know, develop a way. I always say that I have two languages in my life. I speak English and I speak dreams because I've worked so long, like really my whole life, on the symbolism of dreams. And I also want to add that dreams symbolism, I should say, is 24/7. You know, we can get just as much information from the things that happen to us in our waking hours as we can in our, you know, sleeping hours. So I use symbolism just like I fell a couple of weeks ago, and I won't go into that. But the injury that I got was kind of funny, because if it had been a dream, the information that I got from my fall, like, okay, I didn't need to dream that. This actually happened to me.
Oh, wow.
And it's funny because I got a cut on my foot and it looks like a stab wound. And I had things in my arms. And so I went down on my knees. And so basically I'm telling you what the symbolism is. I got stabbed in the foot and I got brought to my knees. And there was something happening to me at that time. And that's exactly what happened to me. So it played out in a physical way. Wow. It could have played out in a dream, but I probably needed to have it play out in the physical realm because I've had to look at it and basically deal with it for, you know, for 10 days anyway.
But you're saying it was connected to an emotional thing that was happening in your life as well?
Yes, it was. It yes. Yeah. And I've trained myself, but I love knowing where I am. I love it when I get a dream that says, this is where you are. And I'm like, okay, like for me personally, I can settle right down knowing, okay, this is where I'm at. Therefore, I can move out of that, or I can relax and just let myself pass through that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that was my next question to you, Nancy. So
it's
nice. It's really nice. And I want to talk about symbolism too, because you and I talked about that a little bit. But it's really nice if you have the dreams or the waking experiences where you can say, oh, I get it. I understand why this is happening. And it makes me comfortable and I can pass through this. But what if you as a person want one thing, but your dreams are saying something else, and you're not wanting to accept that?
Yeah.
Well, that, I mean, basically that's, you know, that's your conundrum, isn't it?
Well, that's what I'm asking. It becomes a conundrum for most of us, I would think.
Yeah.
Because when we have a plan, it's our plan, and we think our plans are the best plans. And then we'll get a dream, or we'll get somebody that says something to us, and we know that that's diametrically opposed to our plan. Now what? Because my plan's not going to work. So how do you transition into acceptance?
I think that's probably unique for every individual. You know, it just depends on, I'm not sure I want to say your maturity level, because we all have different maturity modus operandi going on, you know, some of us are old souls, some of us are young souls.
Oh,
am I making sense? And so, you know, there's not a one size fits all. There's not an equation. God knows I would love it if A plus B would equal C.
That's what I'm looking for.
That's what you're looking for. And aren't we all? I think if you come to a place where you want the highest and the best for yourself, if you come to a place where, for me, especially at where I'm at in my age, you know, I want to fly. I want to go like the crow flies. I am just not interested in meandering around, trying to find my way, expounding energy. You know, I don't have that to expound. And so for me, it's easier where I am in my life developmentally to say, God, what would you have me do in this situation? Are you telling me this is for my highest and best good? Because if you are, that's really all I want to know.
Exactly. Me too.
I don't want the nonsense of this worldly nonsense, of which there is just so much. And so again, and you know, it's fine to sit with that, by the way. So if you have a dream in your heart and something shows you that that's not the right path for you, that's not the right destiny, that's not why you came here, this would be harmful to you, not helpful, not healthy for you, it's okay to sit with it, but probably don't sit with it too long, depending on what you're being shown. Again, depending on what you're being shown. Right. It's all unique.
And that was just more or less a general comment for the people, because I mean, we have so many different people listening that watch, that love these podcasts. I do want to go back to Lydia Sponsee for a minute, and then I want to go back to your sponsee, Lydia, and the question that she had. I would like to hear that.
I have it right here. She was going to call in, but I'm going to read it because she's not, I think, speaking of her kids from, she has four kids.
Oh, okay.
Four kids that, you know, and her husband, God bless him, was a very spiritual man, by the way. And he had this brain tumor, and they knew it was coming, but it's hard for her to adjust to not having him. Mm-hmm. And she's asking why he's not visiting her in her dreams.
Okay. And I have an answer for that.
Mm-hmm. She says, how do I know if Doug is visiting me in a dream and it's coming through a metaphor? How can I encourage him to visit me in a dream? And how do I prepare at night to have a clean channel to find me in my dreams? Because sometimes, by the way, if we have the TV on too late at night, are we all messed up? Should we go to bed without the TV on?
Absolutely. It's a lot of static. It's a lot of static, and we're like we're like Velcro. We you know, static attaches to us. So don't we really have enough, especially in the collective consciousness from which every, you know, I mean, right, like now the world's, you know, really, you know, tough place. And so we already have enough of that. So I would definitely have the most peaceful and calm, but let me speak to that. Cause there's a couple of, things that I, you know, that maybe will be helpful to her. I don't know if you read this on the bio, because I lost you. I didn't hear exactly what you said, but I worked with survivors of suicide and compassionate friends. Okay. I'll tell you what, when I would go to speak with those groups, I would just pray all the way there, please God, don't let me say anything. Don't let there be a phrase or anything that would in any way make their journey even more difficult. And what I observed is that often when someone passes, there is high emotion, high emotion. And so like it or not, you're more close than you think you are. You already have enough emotion to deal with. And so it's just a wall there. What happens sometimes in families is that a good family friend, or maybe, an in-law that's not, you know, from that particular or family origin, they'll get a dream about a loved one, because they don't have the emotional attachment that's there, that's present at that time. So then they'll say, you know, they'll call whoever is their friend or whatever, and they'll say, oh my gosh, you know, I talked to Bobby last night. He wanted me to tell you he's fine. Everything's, he looks great, da, da, da. And so that's one thing I learned from them.
Interesting.
Another thing is, if you have studied, or if you've read a lot of encounters, past, you know, not past lives, but near-death experiences. Yeah. And if you've observed, I've observed families whose loved ones has passed, and some families get a sighting, a visitation, if you will, almost immediately from that individual. Others do not. And from a lot of things that I've read and that I've come to respect and understand over the last few decades, sometimes when people pass, they have a lot of work to do on the other side. They're not free to come and talk to us.
Interesting.
And some people seemingly like can bounce around and, you know, talk to, have dreams. You know, I lost a friend in March who collapsed and passed away. And she just seems to talk to all of us, all the time. But I do believe that on the other side, you know, we don't, it's not my understanding that we lie around on a cloud and just listen to the angels sing, which there's nothing wrong with that, by the way, but that who we are here, we are there. And like you said with your brother, you talked about how your brother just had this healing. So it once, when your brother passed, you would not be able, he would not have been able to come back to you, is my understanding, like he just came back to you 10 years later. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
So there's so much we don't know. Like, we think we know everything. Oh, we just really, I mean, that's, anytime I work with someone, anytime I work with a group, like, I don't know who learns more, me or them, because it's just a continual process of collecting information and actually seeing patterns from what people say. I try not to judge. Like, when people tell me something that I've never heard or I've never experienced, I just go, wow. And I put it on a shelf, and then it's surprising how maybe it'll happen to me, or maybe I'll have other people that will share the exact same experience. And then, you know, there's a collective thing there that I can maybe share or help somebody with.
Wow. That is so, it's interesting. There was a book that appeared on my shelf around the time my brother died. And we don't know where the book came from. To this day, it just appeared.
Wow. Yes. Don't you love it? I love it.
I've asked everyone in the family, all my friends, they've never seen it before. And it was called Automatic Writing, through a man named Ford, was writing about the other side through Ruth Montgomery, a psychic. And I'm not into the occult that much.
I'm not either. I'm just telling you what I've heard and observed.
In your firsthand experience. So he also says that many of us who have died and had either drug addiction or a terrible trauma, it takes us a long time to come back and wake up and visit you, or we sometimes aren't ready, and we're being worked on. God's, you know,
exactly.
God is working on us up here, and we're out there. We're whispering into your thoughts. Sometimes the great ideas, the great thoughts, are coming from Beethoven and Mozart, and, you know, who knows? I mean, but it all came to this man who died.
Yeah.
So
let me ask a question back to Lydia's Nancy, sorry, but I just want to make sure that we give her a little bit of suggestions.
Thanks for bringing that back. Yes.
For her, since she's not having him come back and do
Yes.
Yeah, to maybe enhance herself.
So what, first of all, what I would recommend, which is really hard, is to try and relax.
Cindy.
You cannot force what's not there. You can't. If she can say at night, for instance, she can say, you know, if you could come and tell me that you're okay, great. If not, I'll be patient. And that way she won't feel like she's just turning her back on him. Mm-hmm. The other thing that lots of people talk about is that sometimes they come to us in different ways, depending on, it could be a bird that sits on the windowsill day after day after day. It could be some little artifact, you know, like something that meant something to them, but might not mean something to somebody else.
Yeah.
I just actually heard of someone who, after their loved one passed, they found the top of a zipper would be everywhere. You know, that like the little piece that you pull up and down, and they actually showed their collection. Like it would show up. They would look down and there would be, you know, a little, what would you call that? A little zipper handle or pull, a zipper pull.
Yes.
And they must have had like 25 or 30 of those. And so every time they found one, they would smile and they would be like, okay, good. Thank you.
I've heard that with pennies.
Pennies.
Pennies in the shower. Same. She goes, yeah. A penny in the shower.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Time is really important. My mother passed away. She had dementia and Alzheimer's for 7 years. So I was thrilled that she was able to pass. I wanted her to. Her life was not what she deserved here. And it was 2 years before she showed herself to me. And it was the day before Thanksgiving, which Thanksgiving was her favorite holiday of all. And I remember that day, I lived in Colorado at that time. And it was like every time I turned, my body, my head, my thoughts, she was there. Like I bawled like for 24 hours. Oh. And Thanksgiving Day, it was fine. But she, you know, it took her almost 2 years. So there was a lot of things I think that she was healing from and whatever.
Oh gosh, that's beautiful. Cindy just came on really quick to ask you something else, I think.
Sure.
Cindy.
Hi, Cindy.
Hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, I'm so happy to get to be here. My husband died. It'll be, it was 11 months yesterday. And you had kind of mentioned, you know, this crow that he had named because he, you know, believed crows were sentient. Crow kept coming to me or jumping on the car. And you were saying that it can be a bird, but I haven't been getting dreams either. And he died. He had terrible brain tumor that was on the frontal lobe. Mm-hmm. And that sounds like it could be the same. It'll mm-hmm. work to do over there.
Yes. And sometimes we have wounds too. And I'm not saying that your husband does, by the way, but for instance, my mother's, my grandfather committed suicide when my mother was 16.
Oh, that's right.
And so my mother carried that guilt with her, God bless her, for 70 years. And so my mother had a lot of healing to do. And I know my grandfather met her. I saw my grandfather meet her and say to her, Mary, I'm so sorry.
Oh.
But they had a lot of work to do because he impacted her life greatly.
So do you think
I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying that we don't know what ancestral things we're working on and that we've been working on here in this lifetime. You know,
that's interesting.
I don't know why I said that, but maybe there is a reason.
Yeah.
So then maybe my guilt or my, there's something that maybe I could be preventing the connection a little bit because I, you know, things that happened at the end or that he was so sick. Could I be blocking the channel on my end?
Sure.
Yeah.
But again, you don't want to add one more thing to like try not to dwell on that one either, because we can collect all kinds of things that we can obsess about emotionally. Should have, could have, would have. It's you know, our humanity is rough.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I would encourage you to be really kind to yourself, and he would encourage you to be really kind and loving to yourself.
Doug really loves you, and he's
went
to visit a very intuitive woman. You know, I don't believe necessarily in psychics, but after hearing what she went through, I kind of might. And she said, Doug's all around you. He's putting you to bed at night. He's with the kids. Yeah. And I don't know. There's a lot of love there.
A lot of love. And my son feels him every day. I'm just like, why can't I feel him?
Well, oh, there you go. So that's the person in your family. Yep, there you go. You have a family member that actually, you know, is wide open for that. So, you know, you can ask your son questions. I mean, not to overburden him, but you know, how's dad doing? Oh, mom, he's probably going to say to you, he's doing great. And then you can take that to the bank. You know what I mean? Like to your personal bank right now.
You know, Cindy, if I can share this with you, my father passed away in March and my five-year-old grandson was so incredibly close to him. It was a winter spring relationship or summer, whatever you call that for short, because the age difference. Mm-hmm. But one day and his name is Angelo. And one day I took Angelo to the cemetery with me and he just bought a little Hot Wheel car and he's standing over top of my dad's grave and he has the car, like he's pointing it down. I said, Ange, what are you doing, honey? He goes, I'm showing Pat my new car. And I looked at him and I said, oh. And I said, he goes, he can see it, you know. Oh, and I said, can he? And he goes, yeah, Gaga, he talks to me. And I'm like, no, he's five. And I says, well, what does he say to you, honey? He goes, he just tells me he loves me and to continue to be a good boy. And he goes, and I'm going to be a good boy. And I went to press it a little bit further and he went back into the five-year-old just kind of like, okay, can we go get ice cream now? You know,
there you go.
But it was real.
It's perfect. It's perfect.
So your son is definitely probably hearing this stuff that should be very, it was comforting to me to know that my father is with somebody. And that aunt was his best bud.
Jack is definitely connected. Jack is 13, her son. He just turned 13. And they were so close, he and his dad.
It doesn't get better than that. It really doesn't. I remember a story of a family. They had a little boy and they just thought he had a imaginary friend. Okay. Cause he talked to this person who they couldn't see all the time. And I guess the father's mother, I believe, had passed away like decades before this little boy was born even. And they didn't have any pictures or anything like that. And one day the father pulled out a picture of his mom. And as the little boy is walking by, he was like, oh, hi. And he started to talk to her. And they said, oh my gosh, you know, like, this is your grandmother. And he said, oh, we play every day.
It's so interesting. Yeah, my little boy, when he was three, my brother had died. And when my baby was one and a half, he died in 1995. And my son was born in 1994, March 1994. But there was a candle by the bed and Jack woke up and pointed and said, Paul Happy, at a picture of my brother holding him. He only met him once. And then a couple years later, Jack was standing by the bulletin board and a picture of my brother fell off the bulletin board. My brother is a little boy playing piano and he turned around to look at the camera. And I caught my son saying this, poor little angel, he didn't know how to, he was actually 2.5. He didn't know how to say those words yet. Yes. I caught him saying that silently to the picture. It was so interesting. We don't know how close they are to the other side.
Absolutely. And you think about it, you know, when they come into this world, they're much closer to the other side than they are to this world.
Right.
And one, talking about an angel, I know when my youngest son was probably less than 2, but talking, and he loved breakfast. And he wanted everything for breakfast, toast and cereal and fruit and yogurt. And one day he was messing with his yogurt on his, you know, the little table, right? And I said, you know, oh, what's that? And he said, oh, that's an angel. Now, that was years ago when you didn't talk about angels except at Christmas time. So I was like astounded, and it looked like an angel.
Oh, wow. Yes. I mean, I don't know. There's so much mystery that should be exciting rather than fearful. We shouldn't be afraid of the mysteries of the universe.
Yeah.
Of the spirit. Because if you think about it, Ralph Waldo Emerson said, it's a thought universe. Thoughts make the man. I mean, honestly, you go in a direction where you think it first. It's an invisible, it's not something tangible you can touch. You can't touch thoughts. And they do determine everything. So why isn't the spiritual world more something that we actually examine more? And we should examine healthy people more than disease, by the way. There's very little, you know, information about health. There's more about the illnesses.
Right.
And, you know, speaking about that, and thanks, Cindy, for stepping on and sharing your life with us, because that's very personal, and dreams are very personal. And I want to take this to a different level at the moment. And, you know, we have so much unrest in the world that you had talked about, Nancy. Is there anybody now is it possible to have collective dreams, I guess is what I'm asking.
Well, 9/11. So 3 months before 9/11, and then this is recorded, people were dreaming about towering infernos and planes flying into towers. Oh. And no one, you know, they would wake up and go, well, what's that? Right. That's probably when you would hear people say, boy, that's a crazy dream. And 3 months later, they saw, you know, what was in their dreams.
Wow.
Now, what that says is that 3 months before 9/11, it was all set. Nothing was going to change it.
Oh, really?
It was completely set. And I believe, you know, that we have opportunities. Governments have opportunities. People have opportunities, families have opportunities to change or to discover what's lurking in the darkness.
Yeah.
But if we don't discover, if we don't change, if we don't shift, then eventually you're going to get whatever it is that you're ignoring or pursuing.
And, you know, in the Bible, it says that young men will, in prophetic times, that young men will dream and old men will have visions. I believe it's that way.
Correct.
So and I know this topic is so broad, and I'm sure that we're opening up a topic that so many people are fascinated with, and you know, like the dream world and what does it mean and can we do anything? But like you said, people have those dreams. I've had dreams about plane crashing and stuff, and I wake up kind of terrified, like, okay, that was a spooky, crazy dream. Then I started realizing, well, I dreamed about planes crashing or tornadoes, that my life was in chaos.
Yes.
And in
trouble, yes. Right? Yes.
But if we get lots of people dreaming the same dreams, and that's kind of the platform when Lydia and I started Godshots, was getting the message out there to people. That Godshots are happening. They could be happening in our waking hours. They could be happening in our sleeping hours through dreams.
Absolutely.
So there's lots to be said for people to coming together on a platform like this to discuss, for example, dreams. What if 30 people see you on here and say, wow, I mean, I'm just going to make this up, but I've been having a dream about suitcases in bathrooms or something. Like, I don't know what that would mean, but I'm just making it up. But maybe there is something collective, and maybe this is a type of platform where people can come to express their grief, like Cindy is saying, is there anything I can do? Is there any way? And I can tell you, Cindy, that I've had two amazing dreams related to my grandmother and my sister-in-law that have since passed. I didn't hope for them. I didn't pray for them. I didn't wish for them. When I was at my darkest and my lowest and most fearful and my saddest, it just happened. It just happened. And after that, both times I quit crying. Both times I just intuitively knew that things were better. So I guarantee you that at some point in time, you will get the full picture. And that's very exciting. But back to this platform, Lydia, I mean, I think that this is one of the things that we're looking to do, is to bring more people together with whatever experiences.
Well, interesting that you studied under Jungian dream researcher, because Godshots is a term that I got from the book Synchronicity by Carl Jung. Jung is my favorite of all the, you know, of the logotherapists. He was actually Viktor Frankl was the logotherapist. I love Carl Jung because he actually believed the synchronicity explained things. It almost explained a spiritual, you know.
He had the spiritual realm to it, absolutely. Exactly.
And that there weren't just random coincidences. And he went along with Einstein's quote, which is my favorite quote, coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous. And Einstein studied with another physicist, Pauli, that there's an intervention of grace that is happening when you have coincidences that seem
absolutely
uncanny.
Right? Absolutely.
That's where Godshots came from. It's coincidence that it's uncanny. Absolutely. And it points to something beyond just random chaos.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's why we're bringing people together in the synchronicity realm, and also to talk about glimpses of the divine, glimpses of beauty in the world, to focus more on that. These are thoughts determine everything, really.
Yes. And you know what? I believe in counterbalance. So when there's so much on the news about the negative, and yes, it's happening, but I also believe that, yes, so is our positiveness. So is our positive dreams. So is Godshots and miracles that are happening every day that we need to be able to recognize too, to counterbalance the negative that we're seeing and hearing about. And so I just think this is a real exciting time, a super exciting time for Godshots, for people. And I know that there's a lot of people out there, and people that I've met in Utah that say to me, well, my goodness, like, I would love to watch a podcast like this because I have lots of Godshots. Like, where is this? How do you get to this? You know,
we're collecting them from all over the world. Hospice Godshots, cancer Godshots, recovery Godshots. I hear that word every day in meetings and recovery meetings. But Nancy, what does a Jungian dream expert, the one you work with, Robert Reese, is that his name? Dr. Reese?
Yes, Dr. Reese.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean? A Jungian dream worker. What does that mean? What did Jung bring to the dream conversation?
Well, of course, he's known for the archetypes.
Yes.
So, you know, just basically, like, for instance, water, fish, they would be archetypes that are known all over the world. Having said that, though, because I worked with him for 18 months, I attached myself to some Jungian archetypes. But when I began to work with Dr. Gail Delaney, we did not do that. Now, I can go back and forth, and there's information from anyone who studied dreams. So you can, it's eclectic. That's what I think, you know, but with Dr. Delaney, for instance, and I had shared this with Darlene. So if Darlene and I have this exact same dream, and it has a German Shepherd in that dream, I have a beloved German Shepherd that was my best friend, you know, just loved him as, you know, as a young person. Darlene, on the other hand, was bitten by a German Shepherd, and she had become, from that experience, generally speaking, you know, she was fearful of dogs and German Shepherds in particular. So just because she and I had the same dream doesn't mean that it has the same meaning because of our history.
Interesting. Interesting. Oh,
that, so that's what I, now Dr. Delaney studied at the, in Switzerland at the Jungian Institute. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Risi, I believe, studied at a Jungian Institute in Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh, interesting. Matching dreams really quick. My little boy, when he was five, we slept together a couple of times, you know, on weekends in my big king bed. And we woke up, we had the same dream one night.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he said, "Mommy, I dreamed about a train full of gold, bringing gold to our house." And I went, "That's weird. I dreamed about a tree that had gold underneath and I was digging the gold out." Mm-hmm. And it was such a positive dream. And I had a matching dream with my mother. My mother had a very, with a very toxic, strange, God bless her, rest her soul. She just died a year and a half ago, but bipolar borderline and never knew it. But she dreamed about a big bird landing on the lawn. And I had the same dream one night about a huge reptilian bird landing on the lawn. And we were in different locations when it happened. How do you explain those kind of things?
Well, it's just energy. I mean, think about this in a very simplistic way. So you get invited to a party, you walk in the front door, the music's playing, everybody's happy, the food smells and looks great, and you're like, yes, I am going to have a great night. Or you're invited and you walk in the door and, oh my goodness, instantly you know you're not sure you want to be there. You know, maybe they've just had a fight or it's been a bad day all around.
Yeah.
So we pick up those things. And when we're in a family, it should be easier to pick them up. So I'll give you an example. I don't know if you read it in the book or not, but when I was in six and I was in first grade, I had a recurring dream for about 6 months in which I had an orange blanket.
Oh,
and so my dream would start out with black stick figures that would begin at the bottom of the bed. They would march up the orange blanket. And as they got close to my my neck, they would turn into ABCs and 1-2-3s. And I mean, it was just, and so, you know, it was an anxiety dream about going to school. And I always thought, I have to tell my mom when I wake up in the morning. I mean, I had a lucid thought, I have to tell my mom. But I never did. And 6 months later, the last time I had the dream, the black stick figures became a street with houses on either side. And I was walking down the middle of the street. And that's when I knew I had overcome my anxiety for first grade.
Wow.
And then I told my mom. So that's also an indication. Like if I'm working with someone and their children, that's another indication that that child had a lot of courage. I had a lot of courage. I could have told my mom that dream, but I didn't. I just kind of hung in and worked it through till the end. Then I told her.
Wow.
When my son was six, so that's like 29 years later, he wakes me up at 1 a.m. He had the exact same dream. The exact same dream. I can see that like it was yesterday. I can see myself standing next to his bed and he's talking about the black stick figures.
No
and as
way.
They get closer to his throat, you know, he's very anxious.
Now
he and I have a very soulful bond. And so that's not, if he appears in my dreams, and it's not something that's for him, that I'm getting a message directly for him. If he appears in my dreams, it's usually my soul. The symbol is usually my soul. If my other son appears in my dreams, it's a heart issue.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I need to look at in that way.
You had also mentioned the woman who had a bullying incident with her son. He was being bullied, but she didn't interpret the dreams properly, that she should move out of that school. Was that...
I think that was me. That was my son. We had moved.
Oh.
We had moved when my son was 14 and he couldn't wait to go. I mean, he was just so enthusiastic. We were moving back to my hometown and his brother went off to college and he had just a horrible, horrible, horrible time. Horrible. It was, being military and being raised the way I was raised, you know, we just didn't have any racial bias, blah, blah, blah. And there was a lot of this going on in the school. And he would talk to everyone and anyone. And so his life was threatened. It was just really, And I, you know, I was cautious because sometimes parents can make things worse if they step in. And basically what happened for me is that because I worked with Dr. Reese, he taught me that small domesticated animals were a symbol for your intuition.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
Yes. And so I always paid attention to that. Well, this horse got bigger, 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 bigger. And when I woke up, I knew that I was not listening to my intuition. And that's why the symbol in the dream just got bigger, 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 bigger.
Oh.
And that's when I actually went to the school and, you know, basically, and then we found out that the bullying was anybody that came into the new school, to the school, got bullied. And anyway, and eventually we just moved out of that district and whatever. But
well, Nancy, let me try to wrap up here a little bit,
because sure.
Dream world is fascinating and you've brought us a whole lot of information. What is the title of your book one more time for our audience?
It's Many Dreams, Many Journeys.
Many dreams, many journeys. It's
can
a very
back on. We would like to have you on kind of regularly, actually.
You know, the thought came to me, I'm telling you, the thought came to me that if this would work, I would love to enlarge your podcast by just putting this, a dream segment in, you know, you could do it once a month, whatever, in which you could, I would absolutely love it.
Yeah, because there's probably so many questions people have, and I have to get someone to help me read the questions out loud in my earpiece. So, because I can't keep looking at the Facebook questions right now.
But what I would like to do if we can, and I told Nancy, I told you this before we kind of started, and that is if anybody has a desire to talk to you personally or just have a consultation, because you do Zoom dream consultations one-on-one or with groups or at universities, colleges. Mm-hmm. And so you've been an educator for 30 years in dreams, which is fabulous. But for privacy's sake on the show right now, if anybody would like to get in touch with Nancy, if you could just send your emails to the same place that you always send them at Godshots, then we will be sure and filter through those and get the ones to Nancy that would be appropriate for her, for everybody that's listening. I'm certainly glad that I had the opportunity to meet you and to have this time to spend with you and to read your book, because it was simply fascinating.
And must have been a God spot, us meeting. Or a God shot.
Well, everybody on this program now has been a God shot in meetings. Yes.
Well, I think it is, because I was working with Cindy and about this, she asked me last week, why doesn't Doug come to me in my dreams? And I can't believe you were the guest today. I was so excited last night. I just combed through your book. You know, I kept reading over and over. I wrote several questions down, and there was another dream I wanted to ask you about, but we can wait till next time, I guess.
Okay, whatever you decide is fine.
The thing about the incubation statement, I don't ask you, before you go into that, the incubation statement when you're trying to make a decision in life, how your dreams can help you. Right. But I want to mention that the author of the Twilight book series, apparently the entire book came to her in a dream. Sparkling vampires, standing by a brook, and she wrote those books out of a dream.
Absolutely.
Oh, who knows what they can give you, you know?
Well, again, I mean, you can do a podcast on creativity and dreams, because, you know, what's the old phrase? Sleep on it. How many people have woke up, you know, I mean, when I work with corporations, I mean, that's one of the things we talk about, you know, what's going on, you know, at work or at home that's hindering, you know, your performance at work, you know, what's the issue? What can you do? So, yeah, I mean,
that's
writers, authors, you know, painters, I mean, anybody that's great. I mean, dreams, it's funny because I hear people say all the time, I'm not creative. And the thing of it is, we are. We create 3 to 10 times a night. That's what research tells us.
Amazing.
So, you know, we're wonderfully and awesomely made, as the Bible says. Absolutely.
And that's why we're so creative first thing in the morning when we're coming out of sleep.
Yes.
And that's why it's important to keep a journal beside your bed, thinking or feeling, because that really helps. Yeah. But,
and you know what? And for someone like myself, who's been in, like, I know people who do that religiously. They're so good. Honestly, I have to sometimes put my feet to the fire and just, you know, make sure that I do that. So
I don't remember mine as well.
I get it spurts. You know, and sometimes I don't remember, but you know, I've noticed recently, Nancy, since I've met you, and I'm trying to be very cognizant of writing things down.
Sure.
That the minute my feet hit the floor, if it's not written, part of it goes away. It just
we're just so busy and we're distracted. You know, the phone rings, the dog barks, you know, our mind is on what's next. I mean, it's just we live in, that's why a lot of times when people go on vacation or over the weekend, that's when they remember their dreams. It's not that they're not dreaming, it's that they're, you know, they're remembering it because they're not so stuffed up with
everything, you
know, things, with everything. Yeah, definitely.
I definitely look forward to having you back and to having some topics.
My pleasure.
There's so many topics in the dreamland.
And
the medical field now. Lydia, you were talking about wanting to pull in studies about how spirituality and medicine are combining.
Absolutely.
There's so much proof for that now. Yes. So much
Absolutely.
Proof. And I think our viewers need to understand that we are mind, body, and spirit. And if you go to a normal mainstream doctor, you're getting nothing but pills given to you.
Exactly.
And there's other modalities.
A pill for every body part just doesn't seem like it's what we were made for. We're bigger than that. And they've proven, Buddhist monks have proven that meditation completely changes the brain waves. Compassion meditation actually makes more gray matter in your brain. Your memory sharpens. It reverses aging. They've proven now that rest can reverse the stress creates a lot of aging, but apparently that can be reversed.
That's who we need next. Nancy, you can come back for that one. We'll find out how we reverse. I don't know.
Aging.
But I need to reverse.
Yes, I hear you. I hear you.
Anyway, it's a fascinating subject.
Yes, fascinating. Thank you for sharing your time, your expertise, your journey.
My pleasure. My pleasure, really.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And to all of the people that are listening, thank you always for tuning into Facebook. We're getting back on track, so you can expect us. We've been on hiatus, as Lydia said, and we're back. So anyway, thank you.
We'll have you back soon.
Okay, great. Great. Looking forward to it. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
That's the love. Let me turn off.